You are listening to Wells Tech, episode 642, recorded on Tuesday, November 7th, 2020. Screencast tools and tips. Wells Tech is a bi-weekly podcast exploring the intersections of technology and ministry. It is part of the podcast network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Our show today is hosted by Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Today on the show, we are so happy to be welcoming back Rachel Feld and Jason Schmidt as they talk about some screencasting tools and tips that they find helpful, and I think you will too. We have our Picks of the Week, a great ministry resource for you Wells educators, some wonderful community feedback, some 360 video stuff, very cool, and much more, so stay tuned. Welcome back to the podcast, everybody. This is Wells Tech, episode 642, and recording this on Tuesday, November 17th, in the year 2020. Joining me, as usual, on a podcast about technology and ministry is Sally Draper. Hey, Sally, how are you?
I am awesome, Martin. Sliding into Thanksgiving week next week, and we have a lot to be thankful for on Wells Tech. We have a great community of listeners and contributors, and we have amazing co-host who just happened to be joining us this week as well. That would be Professor Rachel Feld over at Martin Luther College and Jason Schmidt. And Jason, you can remind us what part of northern Wisconsin you're in.
I'm in Oconto Falls, which is about a half hour north of Green Bay.
Promised land up there, huh?
That's what people keep telling me. I'm still working that one out. I'm a Minnesota native, so I feel like I'm in the heart of enemy territory. But, you know.
Speaking of Minnesota, that's where Rachel resides. Rachel, remind us of your title again over there.
I'm the Director of Academic Computing and Online Learning here at MLC and native of Wisconsin. So I would prefer Wisconsin.
Flip you too, yes. Well, we really appreciate having you both on. And you warned us when we asked you both to appear on the show at the same time that you never know what you're going to get. So be careful what we wish for. But we've been enjoying it so far, and we anticipate nothing but the same, you know, in this show. This is a... for you, Rachel, must be a very busy year as lots of people probably have virtual education type questions, and that's right up your alley, right?
Yeah, it's been a blessing in disguise that I'm kind of on a mini sabbatical in order to finish my dissertation. Not so much a blessing maybe for the progress of my dissertation, but it's been nice to have the extra time to help both the faculty and students here on campus. And also I've getting emails from around the Synod. I love getting those kind of emails. Someone emailed a couple weeks ago asking a question and said, I understand if you don't respond to emails from random strangers, you don't have to answer me. I was like, I respond to emails from random strangers.
I've never had anybody say that. That would be great.
It's really considerate. I'm so glad that they are giving you permission to not answer. That's fantastic.
It was so nice. But also as a Wells teacher, I was like, you're not a stranger. I'll help you.
That's right. We're all family here.
Exactly.
Jason, what about you? Are you in person or virtual right now in your school district?
You know, Sally, it depends on the week. We have gone back and forth from in-person to virtual to going back to virtual next week to coming back into in-person a week after Thanksgiving and then going back to virtual right before Christmas. So we're just
ping
like,
pong.
You know, we're all over the place. That's exactly right. But, you know, I will say that one thing, you know, for as much as back and forth as we're having and experiencing in our district, it's one of the very few places that I've seen that is really absolutely walking the walk as far as, you know, making sure that they're doing what they feel is the best thing for the kids that they're serving in that particular, place. Not that necessarily other districts aren't doing the same thing. But you know, it's just been, I've been really impressed with our, leadership and the way that they've taken the approach to virtual learning. Like even when there's a virtual learning, when we have gone to virtual instruction, we're still bringing kids in, like those kids, you know, we're still our early childhood kids, because we know that that's not effective for them to try and do virtual, and we're putting too much on parents to have them be able to do that. So we're still bringing those kids in, and, you know, certain other populations within the district are still coming in, even though it's a virtual instruction kind of a setup, and we're still busing kids. So, you know, that has been, I think, just a really good thing that our leadership
has
done.
Need, right?
Yeah, exactly. And just making sure that we're doing the best that we can for all of our kids, you know, and with the resources that we have available. Right. So,
well, before we jump into our discussion topic, normally we have education focused topic. Sally, we've got some big news on the Wells Tech front.
Yeah, I'm very excited to share something new with Wells Tech. We've been around for a long time, Martin, since 2008. And it's not that often that we introduce new things because we've done it for so long. But if you visit our web page now, wellstech.wells.net, you're going to find a new subscribe link in the right sidebar. And what that's going to do is allow you to receive email anytime we publish a new Wells Tech episode. So perhaps you aren't as in tune to your podcast software to tell you when there's a new episode, and you'd rather just get a little nudge. And this is the perfect way to do that. You just click the subscribe button, give us your email address, and you will get a nice email every time we publish a new episode.
And we promise not to abuse it. I think this is great. We've had this request a few times, and this is a good thing for people saying, hey, be nice to get a little bit of notification. Not everybody is up to speed on RSS or these podcast player things. So this is a nice addition. So our thanks to our coworker, Julie Duran, who worked hard on getting this up for us and looks really nice. So thanks, Julie. And looking forward to having people subscribe. So wellstech.wells.net is a place to go where you see that button. All right, gang, let's jump into our discussion topic. And obviously, there are a lot of things that we could talk about related to educational technology. But one very timely topic, of course, with people, our teachers, having to think about virtualizing their class. And that is how you do that with the software that's available in the category called screencasting. And screencasting can be defined in a lot of different ways. By the default nature of the two words putting together, screen and casting, you'd imagine that, well, you're just showing your screen. But there's more to it than that. There's all kinds of things that you can wrap around that, and lots of different ways to do it and lots of different tools to use it. So, gang, what are some of the use cases for screencasting? Why would you need such a thing?
I think that, at least in my context here at MLC, what we see screencasting used most for is giving short mini lessons to kind of either enhance the readings that they're doing from their textbook or to explain things. Personally, I use screencasts all the time to show people how to do things on their computer. So if they've got a question, it's way easier for me to record the steps that they need to take in Moodle or in their email or whatever it is, than it is to try and write that all out. So, those are my main uses of screencasting, but I know there are tons more.
Yeah, and I would just echo a lot of what you just said. It's much for, you know, our use cases in my district and with the people that I've worked with. Generally speaking, they're either demonstrating a skill or they are teaching content or presenting content as part of a lesson. And you know, the thought behind that is that, you know, we're using this as, kind of a supplement to a direct instruction. So, you know, if I had been in a classroom or with a group of kids, I would have done this same thing, but maybe I'm just using a screencast and presenting a lesson, condensing the content down a little bit and just getting the point across. So it's, you know, trying to be more efficient with the time that we have. It's kind of, you know, and I think, Rachel, you kind of alluded to that too. You know, it's just, it's easier for me to record a video and explain it rather than try to type out step by step, first go here, first go here, first go here. And it just helps with the understanding of whatever it is that you're trying to get across to people.
And as far as the student perspective and maybe even the parent perspective, they have that video that they can watch and rewatch if they need to get the concept. Maybe the students are responsible, but if the parent's coming in to do some assisting or whatever, it gives them some context of what the student's trying to accomplish as well.
Yep. Yeah. And one of the things too, like, you know, as far as screencasting is concerned, like, you know, I have a lot of times when I'm talking to people about how to use something like this or when they would want to do this, I always, I come back to the phrase, whoever's doing the work is the one who's doing the thinking. So, you know, we were, at least in my district, you know, we're kind of at a point right now where generally it's the teachers that are making the screencasts, but eventually, you know, the way to build that is to have kids demonstrate their learning through screencasts, because they can do all of the same things that the teachers are doing, just, you know, kind of taking the load off of what a teacher is trying to do and putting it on the kids instead so that they can show what they know.
Most definitely. I think too, I kind of hope that one of the results of this screencasting kind of surge as teachers are finding out about it is, as you were saying, that to help parents, I think that even when kids hopefully are just learning face-to-face and not virtually, there's still a lot of opportunity there for screencasts to help parents. I think to teaching first and second graders how to add and subtract with regrouping, which was by far one of the hardest things I've ever done in my life. And because of how terminology changed and how math strategies have changed, there were a lot of times I had, excuse me, parents who were just a little bit confused as to what we were doing. And had I made a screencast showing how I had taught it and how what we were doing at school, I think that would have gone a long way in them helping their kids at home. So I hope that teachers can continue to use these tech tools to offer that kind of support to their students.
So how approachable is the technology? I know that obviously there are teachers who have been forced into, you know, virtual circumstances, and they'd never done anything like this before. Are the tools to a point where we could recommend them, and maybe we will here with some tools, you know, with some best practices and some tools? Or is there some education that they should go after to get up to speed? Or what would be the approach for somebody just totally new to this, and they know they want to do this, they see the need, and how should they be approaching this?
You know, Martin, if we would have gone back to when you guys first started Wells Tech, and we did an episode on how to do something like this, we would have been talking about, you know, high end machines, mm-hmm. and, you know, you'd have some really powerful hardware that you'd have to have. You'd have to purchase some specific software for it. Editing would be a huge pain in the neck, and then you've got to figure out how to get everything out to everybody. So you're going to burn them to a DVD, and they're going to have to plug it into their TV, you know, all of that kind of stuff. With the way that things are now, though, this is way more accessible. You know, it's a really fun time to be a part of education, I think, right now, because there are just so many tools that are out there that, you know, make this just, they just take so much of the how-to load gets unloaded off of you. And, you know, now you just push a button literally, and the machine does everything else for you, to the point where you could record a screencast on your phone right now if you wanted to. All it takes is just downloading an app and saying the things that you want to do and demonstrate what you want to talk about.
Easy. Plus, you've got all kinds of instructional videos on YouTube that would be a quick, easy watch. Mm-hmm. Or there's probably somebody in your faculty that is comfortable with it that could do an hour in service and get everybody up to speed and answer questions pretty easily. Because you're not struggling with the hardware. Hardware is probably one of the easier things to overcome at this point.
Yep. Yeah. The how is easy. It's the what that we need to work on.
Alas, I kind of judge tech tools based on how many emails I get from people about how to use them. And I get very few emails about screencasting tools and how to use them. So that's good. Probably pretty good. They do kind of range from really easy to use to way more involved. So this past spring, when we switched to online quickly, we recommended Screencastify to our faculty because it is just click, click, record. It puts it in Google Drive for you. You get a link to it. It's that simple. Couple clicks and you're completely good. We're leaning a little more towards Screencast-O-Matic now because it's got some more editing tools, but it can be as simple as you want it to be, to the point where your first graders could totally figure it out very quickly.
Yeah, and we've done something very similar in our district. A lot of our teachers were using Screencastify simply because of that easy integration with their Google Drive. One of the things with Screencastify that we didn't like as much was the fact that it records in a WebM format, which is it's pretty standard. It's pretty universal. But we still ran into some problems with some devices not playing that content properly. If a kid was on a certain kind of iPhone or a certain kind of tablet, they're having problems with playback on that. So our free tool of choice at the during emergency remote learning was to have our teachers use Loom. And that one was nice because everything is web-based and everything like that. You know, it just saves it right to their servers. You give them a link. And then the other part of it is that you can kind of use that almost as asynchronous discussion if you want to. So you can post a video and then they can record a video response. And then the other thing is just kind of, it's just kind of dumb. It's a dumb thing to like. But I like the fact that if I record my webcam with it, I can have it be a circle. Because round is a shape. And it's just more fun to have round than it is to have a rectangle in the corner all the time. So, so those were some of the reasons that we kind of pushed more towards Loom. But any one of those tools is going to get the job done. And they're all very simple. I like your analogy, Rachel, of I can tell how good a tool is or how easy a tool is to by how many emails I get about it. Because every single one of my emails I can tell, yeah, I know that, That's exactly right. So good call.
I didn't know Loom let you be round. I think I need to check Loom now because that sounds really fun.
Hey, right?
And there are a couple other players on the playing field. OBS, Open Broadcaster Software, is good at doing screencasting, and so is TechSmith's Snagit as kind of a entry-level tool, and Camtasia, a full-out video editor. You can do screencasting with those as well. So no shortage of tools out there. I'm sure there's more than these that we've mentioned as well.
Yeah, OBS is open source, so that's completely free. It allows for a lot. If you like to tinker and kind of mess with things, OBS is what you want to try out. You can have multiple inputs and different camera angles and be super fancy. And then if you're looking for editing software to go along with it, Camtasia is one of the industry standards for that. You can add your boxes and annotations and blur things out and add all sorts of stuff. But it also has a steeper learning curve and is a little expensive. So depends what your needs are.
Yeah. If you're spending money, I would say that Snagit and Camtasia is probably the absolute, that's the gold standard as far as something that's really easy to use, but at the same time is really powerful. I have access to Adobe and, all of those other different kinds of video editors. But I always come back to my personal license of Camtasia just because, it makes all of that stuff really super easy. But even with education pricing, you're spending over $200. So not a cheap and easy way to do that. And if honestly, all you want to do is record your voice and record your screen, get Screencastify or try out Loom. You don't really need to go any further down the list than that.
So let's talk a little bit more about best practices, and maybe I can start with just a general encouragement to faculties and those teams that are considering using this. It's not a bad idea to standardize on one. That way you can support each other. You do get some value in the licensing. And I would say in general, these things are not expensive. You know, they're $4 or $5 a month, or if you get an annual rate, it's even, you know, can be even cheaper. Go ahead and purchase that, at least that base level. So you're not having to put up with the time limitations and some of the other, you know, little annoyances that the free pieces come with. So take a look at it from a faculty, from a holistic level, and then support your people. You know, provide them the license, provide them with, you know, maybe time to share best practices and get better. It is a tool like anything else. So don't, I would say, avoid the temptation to let everybody kind of go their own way. I think there are some good choices here, and you really can't go wrong. So just pick one, pay for it, let the teachers get good at it, and go from there. How about
pick your pony and ride it. Love it.
How about some other best practices about the actual process of the screen recording?
I know that something I always try and do before I make a screen recording is to just double check what's actually on my screen, because my three monitors are often full of all sorts of various who knows
what tabs that are open, right? Yeah.
Yes, that I've forgotten about from the last time I restarted my computer several months ago, but don't tell my dad that. So making sure that, and, you know, checking your notifications, any pop-ups, those kind of things, because you don't want to get in the middle of a 10-minute video and have to start over because your text messages appeared in the corner or something like that. So check, make sure your desktop isn't covered in icons, because that can make some people a little anxious. And make sure your desk is clean.
Remove every distraction you can, right? That's the point.
Yeah, I think.
Yeah, because you want to.
I was just going to jump in and say we have an article, a couple of articles we'll link to on best practices. One of them's from our friends at TechSmith, the people with Snagit and Camtasia. And one thing they said was consider the appropriate size of what you're recording. So it doesn't have to be your full screen. You can size your browser window, for instance, to a certain size, and only show a part of your screen. And that really plays out well on the receiving end. If you make your screen too large, what they're trying to see on your screen may be quite small. So just think about that relationship of the size of what you're trying to show as you're determining how much of your screen to include in the recording.
Yeah, most of these softwares will let you set the exact pixel-based dimensions. So normally I would say just go with 1080. That's a pretty standard, you know, ratio, and go from there, and you can usually get a pretty good resolution. You never know what size screen they're going to be viewing them on either, so you want to at least go 1080. If they want to blow it up to on a larger monitor, that's still going to look okay. I would say make sure your audio and test your audio is captured well, because obviously that's the point. So that when you're counting on them to be able to hear you, they can actually do that. So your levels should be good. So do a test recording and then listen to it yourself and see, is this listenable? Is this watchable?
Don't let Rachel set up your audio.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, Martin, you make a really good point about listening to yourself. And that's one of the things, like, you know, when I'm coaching my teachers to do these kinds of things, and we're working on, you know, practicing and getting better at this and all of that kind of stuff. Even my most seasoned teachers, I always tell them, go back and listen to your lesson after you put it together, because you never know what kind of issues might pop up. Maybe there's something that happened halfway through, and, you know, everybody, and I'm going to, I'll tell this to you. I mean, you guys understand this too. Everybody hates listening to themselves talk. And you just got to get over it, because, you know, it's so important for us to do that quality control afterwards, to make sure that we're presenting this content in a way that is understandable and useful and usable by the end users. And, you know, that whole quality control aspect of it is just very important, and not something that you want to skip. Even if, you know, you went through and did things really well, you know, you still got to make sure that it's good enough, you know? And that was one of those, that was a, another one of those things, like, you know, cause you gotta manage your own time with it when it comes to something like this as well. So, you know, if you're making a 20 minute video or a 20 minute recording, you gotta at least double your time because you gotta listen to the whole thing. And again, just to make sure that you did things the way that you want to make sure that it is. And then the other part of it is, to make sure that it's, you know, it doesn't have to be perfect, mm-hmm. right? We just want to do, okay, you know, yes, I've got it. It's good enough. I understand. I said,
you don't need to do 20 takes, but right.
No, you do not get your point across. But I think if we, you know, if you focus on length at, and making sure that things are, a reasonable size, that helps a lot. So, you know, if you have a 20 minute lesson, maybe you break it down into 5 minute chunks. Just, you know, A, for your own sanity in creating these things, but then also, you know, building in some of those breaks that you wouldn't necessarily, you know, have.
One thing that I learned just to follow on with that, Jason, is when you do these, I've tried and I've done Erie Lutheran High School's online for about 5 years now. And one thing that I learned early on is make them as generic, at least from a time perspective, year perspective, as possible, so that you can actually reuse them. So if you're referencing a time of year or a particular event or whatever, you may have to throw that out and redo it next year, even though you really didn't have to mention that, you know, next week is Thanksgiving. You know, because the next time you use it next week may not be Thanksgiving. So, you know, to try and genericize it, if you think you're going to reuse them, kind of be cognizant of that and approach it that way. And it's not that hard to do if you kind of think that way too.
Another thing that can be helpful to kind of manage your time is to make sure you're planned out. Have maybe a script or an outline or some notes or something to guide you. As a teacher, I know I tend to get off track and start rambling about goodness knows what. And, that's maybe not something they need to listen to for all eternity in a video. So even just having, you know, an outline, and you can have that off to the side on your screen and be recording the other part of your screen. Or if you've got two screens set up, you could have, you know, your recording on one side and your outline on the other. That'll help kind of keep you on track and maybe not have to do as many takes or as many edits or things like that.
And use that pause button. That's that button is there for a reason. So if you want to just kind of do it in 30-second spurts, you can definitely do that. You know, do your 30 seconds, hit the pause button, collect yourself, kind of refresh your notes or whatever, and then go on. I think that's perfectly acceptable. Then you don't have to hope that you can go the 10 minutes without a, you know, without a bumble, and then you can you know, more easily edit it and get things going.
Martin, that's genius. I never would have thought of that. I'm not even kidding. Like, I know there's a pause button, but I never use it.
Pet right peeve there. Of mine something I've seen when I've rewatched my videos is that I use my mouse way too much. And I almost can get seasick just kind of trying to follow the mouse in the circles or whatever that I'm nervously doing as I'm trying to record a screencast. So really keep your mouse movement slow and at a very minimum. Don't use it to draw on the screen erratically and things like that. So,
yeah.
And depending on what you're doing with those slides or whatever, if you do have slides that kind of are an outline to your lesson, those don't necessarily need to be on the screen, especially if they're the word for word kind of slides. That can maybe be shared as a an additional resource for your students. But there's nothing annoys me quite so much as watching a screencast of someone reading their slides. So maybe stick some pictures up there or something else that fits or that makes sense with what you're talking about. But your students don't necessarily need your script of what you're going to say.
Or if you're going to read your slides, then just turn your webcam on instead.
Yeah, exactly.
And we can see you.
Good discussion.
Awesome. Fun.
The great news is not only do you have this great these best practices that have been shared here, but there's a ton of stuff online, great articles on best practices, and you know, from the very technical to the very, you know, more the you know, the educational side of it, the content side, just some great articles that we'll have in the show notes as well. So, and if you've got some tips and tricks that we haven't thought of or shared, please share those with us and we can share them with the rest of the Wells Tech audience as well. So good stuff. I think we can move on. Nicely done, team. Our picks of the week is the next segment of our show, Ladies First. And maybe Rachel, got a pick for us this week?
I sure do. So my pick is a new toy that I got a little while ago. I recently took over for Professor John Nolte as the recording technician of the Lutheran Chapel service that is on KNUJ Radio here in New Ulm every Sunday morning. You can also find it online if that's something you'd be interested in listening to. But part of my job there is to record different hymns and psalms and things, and then we put that together to a radio service. And I needed a way to easily record smaller musical groups. So I asked our wonderful AV guy here on campus, Ben Matsky, and he pointed me towards the Zoom H1N, which is a tiny little recorder. It has nothing to do with Zoom, the video platform, so that those can be a little confusing, but it's a tiny little video recorder about the size of like a Wii remote from back in the day. Has some microphones on the top. It records to an SD card. It's got some, you can adjust the gain and a couple of other things. I've used it a few times now and just pressed the record button and had some students in the chapel with a piano to record a hymn, and it works wonderfully. I was really impressed with how easy it was to deal with and how easy it was to get the recording off and just how nice the recording sounded. And if I learn some more things about sound, I'm sure it will work even better. So if you're looking for something to maybe record interviews or something to record for podcasts or any number of different different applications, I think it's about $100. So it's affordable, not cheap, but affordable, and can also be used as a USB mic.
Real
and
batteries.
A couple other things. So something a new toy that I'm really enjoying playing with.
So does it record SD, did you
yeah,
say?
Yeah, right.
Or is it internal memory?
It records to a micro SD card.
Okay.
Wow.
Great.
And I can't believe we're to a time in our lives where Wii is retro.
It does not. It runs on real batteries.
Oh, gosh. Old school. Yeah. I remember those old school Wii remotes.
Oh, gosh. Non-rechargeable.
No, that just means I'm getting old, Rachel.
The same ones you put in your Wii remote, apparently.
Yes. My Wii remotes were rechargeable, actually. Oh, you need that for Rock Band.
Right. That's right.
We are old, Jason. Sorry. Well, I am too, so.
All right.
New topic.
Sally, you want to go next?
I'd love to jump right in here. And actually, I think I might give credit for this to Jason, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but for quite some time now, and I'm sure through someone's recommendation on the podcast, I've been following the Computer Science Teachers Association, CSTA, and they have some awesome resources. They have an annual conference. They just recently did a virtual conference because they weren't able to have an in-person one, obviously, this year, and so a really neat organization. You can join for free. You can also have a paid membership and get more benefits and things like that. Recently, I read an article from them that pointed to a resources for virtual teaching page that they've put together with a lot of different links to articles and webinars and all kinds of things around teaching in the virtual environment. And obviously, it's geared toward teaching computer science. That's the CS part of CSTA. But I think some of it is also very globally applicable as well. Interestingly, in their tips and training section, I found Screencastify listed. So they made a recommendation of Screencastify as something to use for virtual teaching. But they have the page organized into four different areas: tips and trainings, tech tools and curriculum, self-care, and then teaching about COVID-19, which is not really computer science specifically, but just an area where they've gathered resources that might be interesting for you to use. And then in each of those areas, you can drill down by grade level. So let's see, they have it organized with elementary, high school, and middle school options there. And then by resource type, like I said, they have videos and webinars and directories of items and courses and all kinds of things that you can pick. And then finally, by your goal, such as collaboration or engagement or whatever it might be. So if you're looking for some additional resources to help with your virtual teaching, this might be a great place to check out some of the resources that are organized here.
Neat. Jason, what have you got?
So sticking with our theme of screencasts and tools for that, and one of my, you know, just a really something that I'm really passionate about is having kids create this kind of stuff. So I've always been looking for ways to make that easier on the student side. So my pick this week is Screencastify Submit. It's a new tool that they rolled out within the last couple months. And basically, it allows you to set up an assignment, send students a link, and then have them record their screen and record a response to whatever that assignment is. The nice thing about that is it takes that whole process of creating a screencast and simplifies it even more. So Screencastify is a really simple tool, but it still has to upload into Google Drive and all of that kind of stuff. With Submit, there's no extension that students need to install or anything like that. They just record right there in the browser, and then it goes into your Google Drive automatically. So you don't have to do anything additional to have them share it with you or anything like that. It just goes right into your Google Drive, and then you can review assignments afterwards. Automatically puts students' names on it, you know, it tags them, all of that kind of stuff. And then it also puts them in as a collaborator. So when you're done with it, you can give them ownership back so that they have their own materials that they've created. Just like with anything else, there's a free version and there's a paid version. With the free version, you can have one active assignment at a time. So you just use your assignment, you set it up. When you're done with it, you can archive it and then set up the next one and use Screencastify with that. It also has only a 5-minute time limit, which, you know, is not, I don't think that's a limitation. I think that's actually a feature. Because if I have a class full of kids and they're all giving me a video, I don't want to have to watch a longer video than 5 minutes for my 15 or 20 or 30 kids or however many kids are submitting a video. So Screencastify Submit is what you want to check out.
Awesome. And is that just a free add-on, or is there a cost to that, or how does that work?
You can pay for it, or you can use the free version. So with Screencastify on the free version of it, you can, and Submit is separate from a Screencastify submission, for a Screencastify, screencasting subscription. So okay. Like, you know, you can pay $20 a year and do long, you know, whatever, however many screencasts you want, you know, length, whatever. But with Submit, that's a separate subscription if you wanted to purchase it. The difference between free and paid is just the number of active assignments you can have. And then I think if you have a subscription, it removes the time limit, but you can still enforce that if you want. So it just kind of depends on how you end up wanting to use it.
That's a neat point, limiting the time, you know, of the responses. I've run into that too, where I've created assignments that I never thought of the grading end, you know, and I'm spending a lot longer than I should once I've got the assignment back. A great assignment, but torture for me. All right, my pick of the week is actually just a little blog post called A Beginning Guide to Conducting Great Nonprofit Storytelling Interviews, 6 Tips for Success. This is something that I'm seeing a lot more churches and schools doing now with their promotional videos, is that they're just basically finding interesting people with interesting stories to capture on video and then post, you know, on their website or email out or those kinds of things. And it's actually not a very hard thing to do. You can do it with today's technology, with a good iPhone and a good microphone, or, decent. You don't even have to go real high tech to get good quality content like this. And it's, 3 to 5 minutes. And this blog post talks about just some good common sense kinds of things, like choosing the right person to talk to, setting a goal for the conversation so it doesn't ramble. So you wanted to get, this conversation to express this point, and maybe you're talking to a different person about something else. Doing your homework before the interview starts. So what might they be talking about? What direction should this go? Come prepared with pre-prepared questions that they have in front of them and that you have in front of you. Mirroring during storytelling interviews. This is just kind of a technique to take maybe a not great answer and turn it around and ask, kind of clarifying questions. And they give some good examples there. They talk about maintaining breathing space. So don't jump in too soon. Let them kind of think through it. You can always edit it down, when you're done. And then a bonus tip, thank your interviewee. That's a great, that's common sense, but, you may not always do that. Just make sure that they feel appreciated for spending their time and telling their story. So just something that I think a lot of congregations and schools could be doing if they're not. And it's a great way to get a point across rather than just static content on a web page. You've got a real person with a real story that may touch a heart or an emotion, or it's just a kind of a unique way to witness to the good ministry that's going on at your location. So good blog post from Bloomerang is the name of the site. So I never had visited it before, but just kind of came up in some kind of email newsletter that I'm on that I thought was worth sharing today.
You know, Martin, I think you make a really good point that churches should consider more storytelling. I recently followed a Facebook page. It was kind of around the time that all the hurricanes were coming in to the Gulf Coast, and I have a lot of family down in that area, and maybe someone I know on Facebook shared a story from this, and I can't even tell you exactly the name of the page. It's something about Southern Souls or something like that. But this person on this page does this amazing job of telling stories, and they're so engaging just to take a moment and see things from someone else's perspective, and just really well done. And I think that could be really powerful for a church to make use of.
Yep. Very good. So a link to that will be in the show notes. Ministry resources, the next segment.
Yeah, and we wanted to remind people that there is a special Facebook group that kind of grew out of the COVID activity as we shifted to online learning and things. It's called Wells Educators During COVID-19 and Beyond. So this was started, and I just saw the gal's name. I want to say it's Gretchen Plitzewhite, who's a teacher in the Green Bay, Wisconsin area. And she set up this Facebook page, and I want to say it has maybe 1,500-ish, 1,389 members. So there's a whole lot of Wells teachers on this page or following this page. And there's a whole lot of great information sharing that's still happening there even now. Some of it is not really related to the fact that we're doing virtual learning or whatever, but much of it is, and always people willing to share their experiences and ideas to help you out. And I think from this page, a lot of sub pages kind of spawned off of it at different grade levels and subject matter and things like that. So if you do a little bit of digging, you can find different pages to follow if you aren't already that speak to certain grade levels. Here's one. Just recent post, need your opinion. Require students to show their faces on Google Meet or at certain grade levels at least. And people kind of gave feedback on whether or not to do that and how the student's internet connection might come into play and not showing their video or whatever. But interesting discussion and nice to have people to bounce things off of. I've recently seen a lot of discussions around Christmas Eve services, which I think is something that many, many congregations and schools are wrestling with right now, is how best to carry on our wonderful tradition of children's Christmas Eve programs, but in a safe way, obviously, in the conditions that we're in right now. So just a couple of examples from the page. I think you would find it useful to follow Wells Educators During COVID-19 and Beyond Facebook group.
Excellent resource. Yep. The next segment of our show we call Community Feedback. It's a place where we get to hear from all y'all about things that are on your mind or things that you're trying. And this first one, Sally, is from one of our longtime friends, and he's trying some cool things in his congregation.
Yep, that would be Pastor Rob Gunther, who's currently serving St. John in New Ulm, Minnesota. Maybe that's Rachel's congregation as well. And what Pastor Gunther wrote to us about most recently is doing 360-degree video, working towards virtual reality worship. So the ability to maybe even wear something like an Oculus or a Google Cardboard device and have that full immersion in the worship experience with 360-degree video. Pastor Gunther says the congregation recently purchased a Kodak Pix Pro Orbit 360 camera, and the price point was only $150. Well, actually, if you head over to the Amazon link right now, the price point is only $141.54, so even cheaper than what he bought it for. And he sent us some sample video. We'll include a link in the show notes to just a little snippet of video that he did during worship with the 360-degree camera. And you literally can drag the video around or view it in a VR headset and turn around and see the people behind you and see the people beside you and things like that. So very much an immersive experience. Pastor Gunther shared a lot of details about it. He's really happy with the little camera. I think he said it would just upload right away from the camera. So that's pretty cool. Not a lot of stitching together or things like that that he's experienced with other cameras. It writes to an SD card. And I think his first experience, he tried recording it at 4K, which it is capable of, but it filled up his SD card with 70 minutes of video. And then it just stopped. So he didn't have the full worship. I think he had started it quite a bit before the worship service started or whatever, so he didn't get the whole thing. But yeah, you got to try something and learn from it. And it sounds like he's going to be at using this more and more and maybe sending it on some tours that people are making to the Holy Land and all kinds of things like that. So he's seeing lots of opportunity for VR and maybe also presenting at the seminary with some of these ideas as well. So lots of cool stuff happening there. We'll definitely stay in touch and keep up with what all he's doing with that.
Yeah, it's as if you could just stand up right in the middle of church and just look around, you know, so you could actually go and look and see who the soloist is in the balcony without without incrimination. So
I didn't cool. see you, Rachel, but I did see Professor Thiesfeld.
Vice President Thiesfeld was there, right. Yeah. Right behind the camera.
Cool stuff.
Thanks, Rob, for sharing that.
Mm-hmm. A few more things worth mentioning. We have an interesting discussion going on over in the Wells Tech Google group. Someone asked for recommendations about updating their website, and people shared what they're using for church websites and how they're keeping them maintained and things like that. So if you're looking for some recommendations, that would be a great place to go. Just in general, if you have questions or you have answers, our Wells Tech Google group is a great place to get your ministry technology questions answered. So check it out. And then a couple of recommendations, things that were announced recently. One of them is a new Raspberry Pi. I don't know if you guys heard of this, but there's a Raspberry Pi 400, it's called, which is basically a computer in a small keyboard. So the keyboard itself has the different ports and card holders and things like that that you plug right into. So you literally could take the keyboard, plug in a monitor, and have a full computer. And the price point is only, I want to say, like $100. And then they are $70, actually. And then they have a bundle that includes a micro SD card and an HDMI cable and things. And that's $100. So a really affordable way to get a computing device in a small format. So check that out.
It's on my bucket list to do a Raspberry Pi. I've never done one. Although they've intrigued me, I don't know if I have a specific use for them. I'd probably figure that out. But that price point makes some good sense. So maybe someday.
Definitely. And then a plug for Hour of Code, which is coming up in December. Google had shared some resources recently about teaching Hour of Code even without a computer, an unplugged experience. And actually, CS Unplugged has existed for a long time as a document that you could use in the classroom. I remember using it back in the early 2000s, and here it is still in existence and being improved constantly. So you can go over to this csfirst.withgoogle.com webpage. We'll have a link in the show notes, and you can download a PDF booklet that you can use in any environment, no computer required, to do different activities to introduce students to coding and sending secret messages and translations and things like that. So check out the resources. There's teacher resources as well. And it's a great way to introduce an Hour of Code event in your home or school or wherever you want to do it. So check it out.
Very nice. That do it for community feedback.
That's going to be all we have for this week, Martin.
All right. As we mentioned earlier in the show, if you head on over to wellstech.wells.net, you not only find the show notes and that nifty little e-newsletter sign-up link we mentioned at the top of the show, but you've got an opportunity to give us feedback there via voicemail or all the social networks that we're a part of. Very easy to do that. You can leave a comment right there on the page as well, right underneath each show. So you are more than welcome to do that, and we'll share your feedback if you like on the show. Wells Now,
we want to give a shout out to our good friends over in the Lutheran Schools Office. They produce a really amazing e-newsletter. It comes out on a weekly basis and features news for all kinds of teachers and those interested in Lutheran education across the board. You will be very happy with a subscription to this e-newsletter if you aren't receiving it currently. So always a good variety of things and different organizations and things that are doing things that may be of interest to those who are educators. So check out the CLS e-news. We'll have links in the show notes to where you can see a recent copy of an e-news, actually get to all the archives, and subscribe online if you're interested. So check that out.
Very nice. Thank you. Well, we're going to put a wrap on this show. Want to let you know that we will come back to you in a couple weeks. The book we've been reviewing, Atomic Habits, will be the topic of that show. And we're going to be looking at chapters 11 to 14. Those of you that are following along at home, the third law, make it easy. All about creating these little micro habits, these small habits, when you stack them all together, make a difference in your productivity. Rachel, thanks so much for joining us once again. We really enjoy those conversations. You bring so much to the table. Thank you.
You're most welcome. Always happy to chat with you guys. So,
and Rachel, or Jason, had to leave us. He had a fire drill. You know, those things happen. So he ducked out, but we want to thank him for his little bit of sunshine that he brings to each and every show as well. We really appreciate the tag team that you guys do, and makes a big difference in the show. So thank you, Sally, for all you do, and all you listeners for spending the last 50-some-odd minutes with us. Really appreciate that as well. See you soon. Have a very blessed Thanksgiving.